The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker show here on Channel Radio in association with Biz Radio. You're listening to me, Paul Andrews, and the stonkingly gobby Jules Serkin.
Hello.
Hello. You're driving me bonkers today.
I know. I think you are a little bit upset.
I'm stressed.
You are really stressed.
I'm really stressed.
Zen out now for the rest of the show. You've got a little hour left.
Yeah.
And then you can go and scream at HSBC.
Yeah, it's not just HSBC. There's loads going on.
Yeah, I know. I do think it's something going on in the planets, actually. You think what we're all going through with the petrol. It's just bonkers.
It must be bad for you because you're two-faced, aren't you? Because you're Gemini.
I'm a Gemini, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
me and Stuart, we're Leos, mate.
But you know what my homeopath told me? She asked what time of day I was born. I was born at 11:35 in the morning,
right,
which means I'm on the cusp of Leo. And a lot of my male friends are Leos.
No, hold on. We're not letting you in.
Yeah, I'm on the cusp.
No, you can stay right out there on the cusp. I don't care.
So, Stuart, you could grow your hair wild, couldn't you? Because Leos do have lots of hair, generally.
Keep it short because I have to tame it.
Yeah. What was it like in lockdown, your hair? Did you go for long?
I bought a clipper.
You've been cutting your own hair.
As long as I looked okay on on Zoom, the front sort of looked okay, but the back had wedges out of it. I think the same as everyone else.
My new husband was very corporate for when he speaks at conferences, and he's global, you know, so he goes around looking very sharp in suits and that. Now his hair's down here and he won't cut it.
He looks like Ben Gunn,
yeah,
Treasure Island.
Yeah, his hair is right down here and he's sort of grey flecked, isn't he, with brown and bits, and he looks like, I don't know, quite a surf dude, really.
Yeah, no, we don't talk about hair around here.
Yeah, but I do think that you know, we went through that lockdown, didn't we? We're all really brave and we all got on with it generally, and then it's gone on and on, and we're in year two, and now with, you know, they're talking about turkey shortages at Christmas, shortage of this gas, you know, pigs are stuck on farms and can't be, you know, whatever they do with them, stunned with the gas.
It did make me laugh.
Fizzy drinks, apparently.
I'm sure you saw it because everybody, it was a meme that went wild yesterday. Some pub somewhere in England put a big board out that said, We're sorry, customers, that we're suffering a beer shortage, but please feel free to come in and see what we've got.
I tweeted that. Yeah, it was moi. Yeah. But, you know, when you also see that, you know, yesterday I was in Thanet, and Thanet Council, the toilets were closed. There was water gushing out all over the pavement. That's on my timeline. I was disgusted. At St. Mildred's Bay, which is a beautiful area, people were swimming in the sea. They were, you know, it was a nice day. Loos were not open. And then all the petrol stations were closed from Thanet to where I live. So there's no way I could get petrol.
I'm not going to talk about this very much more because I've talked about it quite a lot. But I just want people out there to know this because there's so much rubbish talked about this. One of the reasons so many HGV drivers has left in the last year, think about this, is for the last year, all the service stations have been service areas have been closed. There's nowhere for them to use a toilet. There's nowhere to get a shower. And there's nowhere for them to get food. And they work 60 hours a week living in a cab.
Yeah.
That is why so many of them left, because the conditions were appalling because everything's closed. So they left, and I don't blame them. And now they all drive for Amazon, which is much easier and pays the same money. Right, I've got some emails that we're going to talk about, and then we're going to talk to a fabulous guest.
Yep.
Not Jules.
And she brings cakes.
Who bought cakes?
And she's legal beagle.
Because she's celebrating a birthday from yesterday. And I wish her many, many, many happy returns.
30 again.
I know. I don't think she's even 30.
Did you know, Paul Andrews, that the Baldwins Travel Group are delighted to share the news with you, Paul Andrews, at this year's Travel Weekly Agent Achievement Awards, they've been awarded Travel Agent of the Year for London and the South East for the 14th consecutive year.
Right.
And the directors are Nick and Chris, and they attended the ceremony and were overjoyed to receive receive the award. And Nick Marks, who's the MD, says, we're thrilled to have won this award at a time when we open our doors and bring back our teams to the branches. So that's Baldwin's Travel. Well done to them. And they have welcomed back teams who have already been receiving new inquiries from customers looking for holidays in Canada, Europe and the Caribbean. If you, well, you could be English or you could be an American. Caribbean is American, isn't it?
Yeah,
it is, yeah. Yeah, like awesome. So the Baldwin's Travel Group is a member, I heard somebody say gotten yesterday as well. I got very upset.
I was very upset.
Baldwin's Travel Group is a member of Advantage Travel Partnership and the UK's largest independent travel agent consortium.
Absolutely.
I might give them a ring. I fancy a little Caribbean.
Yeah. Nick Marks, the MD, has been on the Bunker Show a few years ago.
I remember.
Yeah. Canterbury Christchurch University are hosting a free virtual half-day conference. The university, alongside key partners across a range of industries and sectors, will be hosting a free virtual half-day conference aimed at SME businesses, providing them with the opportunity to access information on support, funding and skills to develop their innovation potential. The conference will be a virtual event on the 13th of October, so it's the day after you, between 9:15 a.m. and 3:30. Well, we'll all be hungover, won't we, from BizFest, Kent BizFest. Yeah, you can find, because there's free drinks at that one.
And a fire pit.
Yeah. You like this fire pit, can't you?
I do like a fire.
You can find out more and you can register to attend the Christchurch University event by going to canterbury.ac.uk/businessgridconference 2021. That's canterbury.ac.uk/businessgridconference 2021. And my dear friend Robert Richardson, the Chief Executive of the Institute of Hospitality, Rose and Robert are doing a charity walk of hope. Robert says, I'm walking for a brain tumour charity next weekend. That's this weekend coming. It's a charity close to my heart, and any pennies you could spare would be truly appreciated. Please donate to my page and help me raise some more. And their page is justgiving.com, Rose and Robert's Walk of Hope. That's justgiving.com, Rose and Robert's Walk of Hope. You can do one more, and then I think I want to talk to Ali.
Food outlets, this is quite an important one. They're being urged to ensure they don't fall foul of new rules coming into force this week, designed to present another allergy tragedy. From Friday the 1st of October, we have Natasha's Law, I'm sure Ali will know all about this, introduced. It will require more pre-packaged food like takeaway sandwiches and salads to have their full ingredients listed. The new law is named after Natasha Ednan Laperouse, who died after suffering an allergic reaction to sesame seeds, which were added in a baguette that she'd purchased from Pret-a-Manger. She was just 15. I remember that. She was on a flight, wasn't she?
Yeah.
Her parents, Tanya and Nadim Ednan Laperouse, have waged a tireless campaign to strengthen food labelling rules and better protect the estimated 2 million food allergy sufferers in Britain today. Changes ushered in by in law will apply to businesses who sell their own pre-packaged food at other outlets they run. Also, it'll include market stores and mobile food vans. An awful lot of work there for the small businesses, Stuart, would you agree? The ones that you mentor, that, you know, if you're mentoring food ones, you know, for market ones and that, there's a lot of packaging and labelling, but essential.
Regulation, yeah.
Yeah, this is why being in business needs so much support to get you started these days. Back in the day when I started my first business, 30
years ago,
you just
make a sandwich and
you just opened a business and started trading, and then, you know, you worked it out from there.
Yeah.
Now the regulations, the rules, GDPR, you know, just basic stuff.
Just building a website and getting all the techie stuff.
No, but the things you have to comply with, you know, GDPR and all that kind of stuff. You know, you immediately get letters from the ICO saying you haven't got a license, and you go, really? Well, I'm not doing anything.
Yeah.
You know, it's just incessant. And what you're not concentrating on
is your business.
It's your business. Yeah. And of course, as we discussed with Stuart, people don't start a business to do the admin.
Yeah.
They don't start a business going, do you know what, I want to do some VAT returns and some bookkeeping because I love that, unless they're starting a bookkeeping business, of course. You know, people start a business because they're passionate about flower arranging or tiling or, you know, web design or whatever it is they're starting their business about. But we've got so many things we need to concentrate on, which is a fantastic leading, a well-produced, planned leading to talk to our next guest, who is the absolutely divinely wonderful Ali Young. And she's divinely wonderful because she really did help me out of a problem legally, and she did so well. And made my life so much better, and I really appreciate it. But that's not why I've invited her here. I've invited her here because she's an incredibly knowledgeable commercial lawyer. Ali, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us.
I sort of feel a bit scared now because, you know, we've just been talking about bloody compliance. Sorry, am I allowed to swear?
Yeah, you can.
Bloody compliance. Mm. And that's sort of what I do is compliance.
Yeah, but
it's hard for businesses. It's really, there's so much rules, so many rules that they have to be aware of.
Yeah.
My job is to try and make that easy, hopefully.
Absolutely, and we're going to talk about some of those things, and we've got a few issues that we're going to kind of throw at you.
Throw
and
at see me. If you can throw them at me.
Yeah, see if you can help
see
us.
See if I can solve them.
Yeah, the difficulty with all of this, of course, is most of the rules and regulations and compliances that we've got are there to protect people. Yeah, it's like the Anagin law that Jules has just said. You know, no one can deny that you don't want to kill someone with your product.
Yeah,
that would be daft. And no one's suggesting for a moment that you should just ignore the rules because they're there for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is, as a business, there's so many
there's of them.
There's so many. In so many different areas. Mm-hmm. And it's really easy when you're just you to actually not know about them, which is, I think, the biggest thing is that...
Is
ignorance of what the rules are.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe we can start our discussion around this as part of a journey.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, you may not know, I worked as an angel investor for a long time, investing in startup businesses and mentoring startup businesses. And the starting point for so many of these things, legally, is the structure of the business.
Mm-hmm. The first question.
Yeah, exactly. And I want to talk about that because I was staggered by some of the things I heard when I was talking to people about this kind of thing, about how they just didn't understand.
Absolutely. I have lots of examples of things that people think they understand but actually are wrong.
Yeah.
Particularly around intellectual property. I don't know if we've ever talked about that, but owning a company name, setting up a company in a particular name does not protect that name.
No, absolutely.
You need to register it as a trademark.
Yeah, and funnily enough, we haven't talked about it, but it is something that affects me. You know, I own Jobs in Kent. I'm not allowed to register that as a trademark or anything else because it's a generic name.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so anybody can use my name, and there's nothing I can do about it. So you're absolutely right.
Well, you could do something, it'd be hard work.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, exactly.
You'd have to go through a whole process.
But the interesting thing with this startup business, and I kind of want to start talking about some of the elements here, is. At the start of lockdown, a number of people, when the government started to announce the various schemes they had, got very confused over their own employment status.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you have people that own a company that think they're self-employed.
Employed, yeah.
Yeah. And you've got sole traders that think they're companies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And those two things, I was staggered by how many people were confused by that.
Yeah.
So... can we start off by just going the three or four main differences of different styles of company incorporation or not?
Sure. I keep it quite simple. So you mentioned sole trader, you mentioned a limited liability company. Those are really your two main options.
Yeah.
There are things like limited liability partnerships and CICs and charities. That's a whole other ball game.
Can I just tell you, because it was hilarious... there's a thing that you call a company limited by guarantee.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, you don't see many of those.
No, don't.
But a few years ago, I had a company that wanted me to invest and to buy some shares. And I looked at the company and I thought, yeah, okay. So I said, I'll buy 25% of the company. And we went all through it until we got to the point where we found out they were registered as a company by Guarantee. They didn't have any shares.
Didn't have anything to give you.
They didn't have anything to sell.
Yeah, no, they're a bit weird, limited by Guarantee. I probably wouldn't talk about those.
Yeah.
Not to say that it wasn't worth you looking at, but the two main differences. So sole trader, limited liability company. The biggest issue you've got as a sole trader is that you're personally liable.
Yeah.
So anything you do, if you do it wrong, someone can come after you and can come after your own assets.
Yeah.
So my advice usually is, unless there's very, very good reasons not to have a company, you probably ought to set up as a company. Mm. And actually, it's not very difficult to set up as a company. You can do it online yourself, mm-hmm. or you can use company agents, or you can get accountants or lawyers to do it for you. All the stuff is off the shelf. You can just buy articles off the shelf, as they call it, and set up with a name that doesn't exist. You have to make sure your name is unique, but Companies House will soon tell you if you can't use a name.
Yeah.
Then you're good to go. Yeah.
Yeah. Can I just say something there? Because you're absolutely right. And I'm like you, Ali. When people ask me, I always go for a limited company. And they go, but isn't it more expensive? Yeah, marginally. Yeah, and there are some reporting things that you have to do.
You have to file two things every year. You have to file a confirmation statement, and you have to file some form of accounts.
Yeah.
But again, relatively simple to comply with all of that nowadays.
Yeah.
Especially if you have a good bookkeeping software, Xero, and all of the others, Sage, they all produce some form of accounts that you can easily file.
So. Absolutely. And the fact is, you get protection, and that's the major benefit of doing it. You get protection. Not only that, it makes you look bigger as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But the thing, just to interject in that, when people are thinking of a company name, do not forget to check the URLs available,
Absolutely. The
social medias available.
So it's all one brand.
Yeah, and the intellectual property office to make sure that nobody else is using it as a trademark. So, there's some basic checks.
Yeah.
Just a Google search to start with.
Yeah.
But also picking up on what you said about your words and your business.
Mm.
And you know, everybody makes these mistakes in the beginning. And that's where I really want to try and start talking to people before they start doing this stuff. And at the beginning, nobody's got any money for lawyers. Nobody wants to spend anything on a lawyer. And I get that. So I give a lot of my guidance stuff away for nothing because I just want to stop people from making these errors. I'd rather do that than dig them out of a hole later, although I can do both.
Yeah.
So, back to thinking of what to call yourself. You know, it would be great if you can register it as a trademark.
Mm.
And even that's not that difficult. You can do it online. Again, there are big companies out there that will do it for you. But the IPO have a relatively straightforward form. And they even have a search engine that you can use to decide what class to register your trademark in. But do pick something that's a bit unique and do pick something that no one else is using. So start with the basic Google search.
And something that's easy to remember as well, you know, for people to keep in their head.
Yeah, but also not just words like Jobs in Kent, no criticism of your brand, but there are limits to what you can do with your brand.
Yeah.
You know, I've spoken to people before who just said, well, just call it something random, you know, triangle law or, you know, anything that's a bit quirky.
The funny thing is, of course, I actually started this business a long time ago when nobody else had a website, let alone anything else.
Yeah.
So Jobs in Kent was available. And as it turned out, it was the best thing I ever did because it's a search argument in its own right.
Absolutely.
And because I've been established so long, they find me.
And you do have copyright in that name, Paul, because you started it. You've used it before anybody else in the marketplace. Yeah. So, you know, if someone did copy you, I would certainly be putting a strong argument together to say that they shouldn't be using your brand because you have built up value in that brand over the time of your business.
Yeah.
So it's not disastrous if you don't get all these things right in the beginning, but that's just one area.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I answered the question properly about sole trader limited liability, but you know, other benefits to being limited, you can take on other people as owners in your business.
Yeah.
So you'll have shares and you'll be able to give shares away or have people invest in your business. It's much easier to sell a limited liability company.
Yeah.
You can transfer a business that you've been running as a sole trader, but it's neater and cleaner and sometimes more tax efficient to do it through a limited liability company. And it just, as you say, looks a bit more professional.
Absolutely. So, is there any benefit at all in being a sole trader?
Well, it's people can perceive it as easier. They don't have to do anything except let HMRC know that they're going to be taxed slightly differently.
Yeah.
So it's one phone call or one email to HMRC as opposed to maybe half a dozen emails and phone calls to set up a company. And once you've started trading, you can incorporate later. Yeah. So you can transfer your business over. So again, the thing that I think, and Stuart will know about this with working with the people he works with, it's just so overwhelming, isn't it, in the beginning?
Yeah.
You know, I've run seminars for startups. And I'm conscious. See, to me, I go through all of these really quickly. Like, okay, we've got to decide how you're going to be incorporated. Then we have to think about your trademark. Then we have to think about your contracts. Then we have to think about your shareholder agreement. And because I am used to this, I have to remind myself that, hold on, slow down.
Yeah.
There's so much to take in the beginning. So it's take it a step at a time.
But the thing is, from your point of view, going, we're just doing the simple stuff at the moment. We'll get the complicated stuff in a minute.
But another thing I wanted to say is, like, you know, you said before about starting up your business when you did, and there's much more regulation around it now.
Yeah.
There is.
Yeah.
And I actually, you know, I mean, I defend my profession regularly because something like the Tasha's Law, something about corporate manslaughter, you know, I grew up when the Herald of Free Enterprise and the Bradford City Fire disaster, and, you know, all of that stuff. So, you know, I do defend my industry, and I'll say, you know, the rules are there usually for a reason.
For a reason.
Yeah, absolutely.
But also, there's a lot of red tape that you can afford to ignore at various points in your business.
Yeah.
It's probably not the most professional thing to say as a lawyer, but I will help you tell you which bits you can ignore and which bits that you need to follow.
Really focus on.
Yeah, and we risk assess it. You know, we'll risk assess it based on what your business is. And that's not just at the beginning, that's throughout. You know, it's always a question of risk. And I worked in-house for many years, and, you know, without a business, there's no point in having a lawyer. I certainly knew my place when I was working in-house. Don't be coming to a meeting and saying what we can and can't do. We're a business at the end of the day. We're going to make this work. Your job is to then make it work.
Yeah, sure.
So, you know, I'm very much like the business comes first and the law comes second. My job is just to put a package around you to protect you as much as I can, proportionately based on where you are in your business.
Absolutely.
And what you want to
do. I mean, for me, I think the two main criteria is to protect yourself and to protect your customers. I think are the two main things that you need to focus on here.
Absolutely.
When you're starting a business, make sure you get the right structure in place for your own benefit.
Yep.
Make sure you comply with the things that are dangerous or difficult or potentially a problem for your potential customers.
Yep.
And get some blooming insurance, because so many businesses start up without insurance.
Yep.
You know, there are some legal requirements. So the next question I want to ask you, Ali, is what insurance must you legally have to run a business?
Well, I'm going to answer like a lawyer. It depends. It does depend what you're doing.
Yeah.
So first and foremost, if you're running your business from home, a lot of the things that people don't remember to do is check with their home insurer whether they are allowed to run a business from home, depending on what type of business it is. If you're just sat in an office, that's not usually an issue. It would be more tricky if you were going to, say, open up a massage parlour in your front living room and you're going to have people in, then you have to consider with your home insurers whether you will then also need to buy some public liability insurance. Certainly if you have a premises, you would need to have some public liability insurance in case any of your customers hurt themselves. If you have employees, then you need to have employees insurance. And if you're giving advice or you're giving any sort of guidance about things, you might also need professional indemnity.
Yeah.
I'm not a broker. I know roughly what sort of insurances are needed for those things, but I work with loads of brokers. So the best thing you can do is, once you know what your business is going to be, where you're going to run it, how you're going to run it, is a phone call to me and I'll put you in touch with the right people, or a phone call to your local broker and they will guide you as well. A lot of insurance is reasonably cheap to have. Nothing to do with COVID is cheap nowadays, unfortunately, like you've discovered with your event. But there's usually competitively priced insurance.
Most insurance products that I've come across at the moment, even travel insurance, just have a caveat in that says this doesn't cover COVID. If you break your leg skiing, we'll fly you home. But if you get COVID on the way, you can do it yourself. But I am passionate about this because the thing about insurance is, the whole thing about insurance is for when those unexpected things happen. And so many people tell me, I don't need insurance at the moment, you know, nothing's going to happen.
And buy it now because, you know, you... once you start making, if you make a mistake, then you'll never get insurance.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're really screwed then. So you know, buy it now while it's cheap.
Yeah.
At the beginning of your business journey, yeah. And then you'll develop a relationship which will go with you, hopefully.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. So we've got all of that now, and we've decided we're going to be limited or sole trader. We've kind of looked at some of the things we need to think about there. Let's move on to what we do next. One of the things we haven't got a lot of time, so we can't cover everything. So some of the things I want to ask you about that are affecting quite a lot of businesses now.
Well, we haven't even got onto my list yet.
No, exactly. Yeah. Well, I'm going to try and get onto that. I mean, so one of the
Ali's list.
Yeah. I've seen the film. I think this is on your list of things that you were going to talk about, and it's something that's very prevalent at the moment because of the lockdowns, because of the pandemic, and because of the destruction, I can't put it any other way, of a lot of businesses. Their whole thing has changed in a very short space of time, outside of any planning cycle. None of this has been planned. It's just been forced on them. And one of the things I've seen a lot, and it's happened to me personally as well, is that we have leases on premises, office premises, that were suitable for what we were trying to do, and all of a sudden they're not anymore because, you know, we've all been sent to work at home and we're paying rent and rates on an office we're not using, da 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 da. And there's two sides to this argument as well.
I was just going to say
that. Yeah, you know, because the poor old landlord is a lot of people, it's their livelihood and business as well.
Yeah.
But I'm sitting on a lease that's got 4 years to run and I've got nobody to use the space.
Yeah.
My landlord is dependent on the income from it, which is a lot of money for their business, but it's killing my business.
Yeah.
What are the legal ramifications of leases?
It is really, really difficult. Mm. And there are obviously the two sides to it. And I act for landlords and I act for tenants. So I'm sympathetic to both positions. I mean, the first thing you have to do is you've got to get your document out, dust down the lease that you signed, if you did sign a lease. I mean, that's a question mark sometimes in itself, whether you've actually even signed a document. But it is the starting point.
Mm.
If you've got a document, then what you're looking for when you look through that document is you're looking for break clauses, hopefully, or you're looking for assignment or subletting provisions. They are options for getting out of leases if they are in your documents.
Mm.
But nonetheless, it can still be difficult. So even if you have the right to assign or sublet, it's finding somebody who wants that space.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, this is where I feel a little bit embarrassed sometimes being a lawyer. The answer doesn't always lie, unfortunately, in the law. If you don't have those things in your lease and you really are finding it difficult, then your next step is to talk to your landlord. And that sounds like an easy out for me, but negotiate with your landlord. Landlords are... and this, again, ultimately, any contractual obligation that you have, you've still got to, no one can go and come after you if you've actually died. So if the reality is that by carrying on in this lease, you won't be here in 12 months' time, then you can talk to your landlord in those frank terms and say, you can hold me to this lease if you want. But in the next, I'll be gone because I'm not going to survive. So let's find a solution to this.
Well, I want to say a couple of things about that, and I just want to make this as a statement. You don't have to comment on this. One of the things I love about using your services as my lawyer is that you are very pragmatic and realistic about things, and you quite often say, you're better off just negotiating with them person to person, and you're absolutely right. That's exactly what I had to do with my lease, which I had a 20-year lease with, and it's only got 4 years left to run. I've never read the lease. Do you know, it took us 6 months to find a copy of it. And when I read it, I went, blimey, who signed this? Oh, it was me. I'd never read it before. You know, it's like terms and conditions. Nobody reads the terms and conditions on anything you buy, the software, do they? Anyway, one of the things I wasn't allowed to do was sublet.
Mm.
So I rang my landlord and I said, look, you know, I'm struggling with this. I don't need the office. You know, I realise we've got 4 years left on the lease. Well, I can't let you out of it, Paul, because I'm never going to... I said, no, but, you know, I've got someone that could sublet a part of it, but I'm not allowed. And we just agreed. And
Excellent.
He went, no, that's fine. No, no, fine. So he just wrote me a little note saying, no, you can write a lease to somebody else for part of the office. Yeah. I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah. And I'll give you a few little tricks as well. So, you know, that's my first point of advice is negotiate with people, talk to them, be reasonable. Hopefully they'll be reasonable.
And do you ever sit in on those negotiations as a mediator type?
I'll sometimes my clients will be the sort of people, they'll be like, oh, I don't really know how to bring it up. I don't know how to say this. Especially younger
people. It's confidence. Yeah,
it is. It's something that you haven't, you know, you haven't done it before. It's a bit scary. So I'll do that. And you see, you can start the nice way and then you can go the horrible way if you have to. This is what I always say to people. You know, they can't sue someone who doesn't exist anymore. So, you know, if your company really is struggling in one of these contractual arrangements and the party on the other side is not being reasonable and wanting to negotiate with you, you wind your company up.
Yeah.
That's the last resort. And you can restructure. You could do other things that will mean that you will live to fight another day. So basically, you know, anybody that's in a contract with you, and that's what a lease is, it's a contract, they have two choices, don't they? They can either
negotiate
with you and be reasonable
and get their money
and get something out of the situation, or you can go down the horrible route. And, you know, I just don't like practicing law where we are threatening things like that, but sometimes you might have to. So, you know, that option is always there to follow if you need it. And I have amazing litigators that I send work to and say, here you go, sort this out now. But, you know, we only go to that as a last resort, and we try the other ways first.
Absolutely. And I do love that. And I guess because I'm that kind of person, I prefer to try and find a solution to a problem that suits everybody.
Make it win-win.
Yeah, exactly. You know, because for the vast majority, apart from HSBC, apart from them, most other people are reasonable when you want to deal with them. You know, my landlord has got he needs income.
I feel really sorry for landlords at the moment, you know. But, you know, what do we hear today on the news? You know, residential property, the value of that has been increasing, you know, however many fold. You know, everybody in this current climate has got to reconsider their business. They can't just sit there and go, well, this is how I used to make money. I should be able to carry on making money like this. No, we've all got to rethink. We've all got to readjust. We've all got to make a living. Everyone needs to put food on the table. I understand that. But, you know, everybody has to come to the table and go, okay, the world has changed. What can we do? How can we solve this
problem? And your apps, that is spot on, because especially with commercial property, the thing we're seeing is that for new leases and new prompts, you know, people are not signing long-term leases. They're just not.
Much unknown.
There's too many unknowns. I can't sign a five-year lease.
We're
I can't sign
unstable,
a three-year lease.
Unstable marketplace, and we're going to be for a long time.
So from a landlord's point of view, they've got to change their business model slightly and offer easy terms.
And look at residential. You know, pivoting most commercial property in London that was business
can now go.
It's going to have to look at being residential. And I know property developers that are already doing that. And there's loads of people who want to live in London still.
Young people love it.
They do.
In fact, to the point where there's a building in Canary Wharf that has just been topped out, a 20-storey office block, and the owners of that have gone, we're never going to lease this as an office.
Of course.
So they've already started converting it into apartments as their only hope forward.
And aiming for a young market as well. That's where London's really changing. And if you're going to, and actually the people that you're working with in the 18 to 30s, making hubs for these people where they live and work and socialise.
And then you can have the hairdressers, the coffee shops underneath,
so
and the little boutiques.
Reboot the market.
I was shocked. I was recently in Shoreditch, and you know, the amount of offices for lease, you know, for let were just unbelievable. Not many for sale, though, because I was interested, you know, in buying, but not much.
But that tells you something, you see. So if there was a real concern, then commercial
property,
they'd be
selling. Getting rid of them,
but they're not. Because they know that ultimately they will continue to make money out of that hard asset. And, you know, they'll keep hold of it. They've just got to. The word, because everyone uses it this year, but they have to pivot. Everyone's had to pivot.
But the flexi use will keep those towns and cities vibrant, you know, because the government are going on and on about us getting back into the office so that we keep the... But the flexi use will do that.
Then the dry cleaners can all come back, and all the cafes can come back, and
hairdressers.
It will all come back again.
I just want to make this as a statement, if any politicians are listening. We don't need you to do anything. Yeah, just keep your fingers out of everything. Yeah. The market
just let us take care of it.
Yeah, the market will sort itself out.
Let the businesses,
please don't interfere with this with stupid legislation that causes problems. You know, unintended consequences are one of the hallmarks of government. You know, and my greatest beef is IR35, which is a ridiculous piece of legislation made worse this year by the off-payroll additions that came in April. And again, has contributed to the lack of HGV drivers because so many of them were personal limited companies. And I'm just going to have a rant, and you can tell me the legal side of this or protect me if somebody sues me for this.
But it's also the way that the HGV drivers were left at the ports having to do their PCR tests and stuff. I mean, they've been treated abominably.
Yeah, but IR35 as a general principle, was all brought about because HMRC believed they were being diddled out of some national insurance payments. That was it. That was the entire reason for AR35. All they had to do to solve that problem was introduce a different tier of NI. Yeah, NI5. Mm-hmm. Yeah, instead of NI4. That's all they had to do. But no, they completely screwed up the small business market by effectively outlawing private limited companies. The other way of doing it was to have a different category of company registration, which would have been private personal limited liability company, which could only employ one person. Anyway, we won't get onto that, but you know,
it's frustrating.
There is, and there's a lot of legal issues around IR35 because a lot of it is now case law, you know, waiting for it to come before the courts to see who's right and who's wrong.
And it's all very grey, and you know, you won't get clearance from HMRC on this, unfortunately. You can sometimes go and get an HMRC clearance on certain tax implications. So we do this sometimes in business sales and things, or we're doing a restructuring or a demerger or something. And you can go to HMRC and say, okay, this is what we want to do. And accountants put a clever plan together about how. So it happens a lot in family businesses, for example. So you have a family business that's grown up with maybe two or three, and then you want to separate that family business out into different families as the family expands and as the next generation comes through. And you can do various sort of demerger schemes then and go to HMRC and get clearance. And that's fantastic because it's clear for everybody, you can work together. But things like this, well, it's just watch and wait, unfortunately. I'm not a big fan of employment legislation, but I have an amazing employment lawyer who covers me. So if you need any help with that, you let me know.
But it shows you really how poor the IR35 rules are, where HMRC aren't prepared to back it up with any information.
Absolutely.
They're going, well, we introduced but we don't know. And you go, well, if you don't know, how the hell am I supposed to know? And then I'm in a ranting mode today. And the trouble with HMRC is they're a law unto themselves, as we look with the loan back scheme that they reintroduced like 20 years after it finished to try and kill people. And that's outrageous to go back over something that happened a long time ago and then try and claw back money. It's just bonkers.
And then to give you comfort and say, yes, that looks fine at the moment. But, of course, we can't say whether that will be okay again
in 20 years' time.
It's like, how do you work with that, unfortunately?
But and for me, that is one of the biggest drawbacks with poor legislation that is you know, if the people that drafted the legislation don't know what it means, how the hell am I supposed to deal with it as a small business person just starting up a business? You know, really? Am I really? Anyway.
But there was something else I wanted to talk about. I don't know if we've got time. You have to shut me up when it's ready. But, you know, you were talking about what's the next step. So, you know, you've decided to set up as a company or a sole trader. You've got your business idea. You've done your bit of basic protection to make sure you've got the right insurance. You're structured properly. What was the next thing? Well, you mentioned customers. So my next big thing, well, there's two things. One, if you're going into business with someone else, make sure you have a very clear agreement over what the arrangement is between the two of you. So often people go into business together, two friends or whatever.
As mates, and have a glass of wine and think it'd be great.
It's a great idea and it is great, and that is it's brilliant that you've got that. But do sit down at some point and go, right, okay, what's everybody expecting out of this? Who's going to do what? When are they going to do it? What happens if we decide we want to go separate ways? What happens? So a basic shareholder agreement, really good idea. And you can get these things. So the FSB, I'm a big fan of the FSB, as you know.
So are we.
And they have a fantastic legal hub. And if you're a member of the FSB, there's lots of legal documents that you can access.
They were absolutely brilliant with us when we had an investor. They were they knocked spots off our investor's extremely expensive lawyer.
There's no better, most best value legal advice available out there. I can't give legal advice at the price the FSB gives it to people for.
But the shareholders' agreement is a really important document, and the way to think of it is as a prenup.
A prenup, absolutely. Yeah. It is. It's a prenup.
Do prenups work?
They do now.
Do they? They
didn't use certain to. Things. Yeah. Again, not a divorce lawyer. I have to check with her. Yeah. But you have to tick certain boxes. But they can. I think if they're signed off by a solicitor, then there can be. I'm not sure if the courts will allow them to be binding, but they'll allow them to be informative. Or something like that.
But a shareholders' agreement basically says what happens when you and your business partner fall out.
Well, it does, but it also takes care of that layer before you fall out. So, you know, it's just, sometimes you get going and everything's great, and then you get to a point in a business life where you might have choices to make in that. You might have someone that wants to come in and buy a part of the business or invest.
Yeah.
You're not fallen out. You haven't fallen out at this point, but you might have slightly different ideas about how that should work.
You've fallen out. Stuart, you're talking out of your bum, mate. No, you're not. We need to do it. No, we don't, you idiot.
I get you all round the table.
Someone's working much harder, one person could be doing all the social media in the evening and Facebook and everything, and the other person isn't bothered about it.
You could have a change in your personal circumstances. Yeah. You could have a partner that falls ill and have to.
You could break your ribs.
Or you could have a partner that took the money you invested and went on holiday to the Caribbean.
You need my litigator. I'll hand you over at that point to my fellow colleague.
I love the way you have this network as well, because I feel that you are a very plain speaking. You don't mix it up with jargon. That's what I like about you. So I feel that a small business can come and talk to you, and you will go, right, this is what you need to do from the top down, and that's
Keep
all
it
we
simple.
Need. Yeah, exactly.
Keep it simple. Talk plain English.
I'm going to do an advert for Ali now. One of the things I love about Ali as a lawyer and why she's my corporate lawyer is, one, she brings cakes, but two, she's very pragmatic and very sensible about how she goes about the law. There's none of this, I'm writing to you on the seventh instance of your letter of the fourth instance with so and so and so and so. You know, I mean, I, a few years ago, I took a lease on a building, and it was one of the simplest things I'd seen. And I had a lawyer, very, very well established law firm, that were looking at the lease, and they were taking ages and ages and ages. And I rang them and I said, well, what's taking the time? We're negotiating over terrorism. What? The landlord won't cover an act of terrorism. I really don't care. If somebody blows my building up, I'm going to die. I really don't give a shit. Sorry, I don't care who's going to cop the fallout of it. You know, really?
There's a lot of that, unfortunately, in our profession.
Well, nowadays, maybe it's kind of, it depends where you are.
Yeah. We're fast running out of time, and I've got some other stuff to do, and there's a question that somebody sent in anonymously.
Yes.
And you'll understand why it's anonymous when I tell you what the question is, and I just want to put it, it's a bit arcane, but I want to put it to Ali. Somebody sent a question that said they've got an employee that has taken a rather substantial loan. Now, I don't know for sure, but I think it's like a six-figure loan, probably for a buying a house or something like that. They've taken a loan from a business, and they've been paying back monthly and interest, and I'm assuming there's been a section 455 implemented there because they haven't paid it back within 9 months, but they want to make this person redundant, and their question is, having made them redundant, can they continue with the loan as long as they're paying it back with interest?
Okay, so my first question would be, is there a loan agreement?
Right.
Is it written down, and what does that say? That's, you've got to start with what actually was agreed at the time.
Yeah.
If there's nothing, if there's nothing in writing, only maybe what somebody said to each other at the time, then there's nothing that would step in terms of employment law that ties those two things together. So the two situations are separate.
Right.
So your employment, that person's position as an employee and that person's position as
a borrower.
A borrower, thank you. There's two entirely separate things.
Right.
Unless there was some sort of condition as their employment
contract.
That said
contract, they had to pay it back, yeah.
Or if, sometimes you do get employment, what do they call them, golden handshakes. When someone comes on board and...
They get a little alarm clock.
Yeah.
A carriage clock, don't they?
Maybe they got a six-figure loan, I don't know. Yeah. But unless they themselves have tied those two things in together... then they should be dealt with separately.
Right.
So the employment situation should be dealt with separately. Yep. Is that person redundant? What's the redundancy package? Take care of the legal side of that.
Yep.
and then their position as a borrower. If there's literally nothing in writing, but they have been paying back that money on a regular basis with a certain amount of interest, then there's an implied term, I would say, there, even with nothing in writing. An implied term that acknowledges the loan and acknowledges the repayments, and therefore should continue after the redundancy situation. However, I wouldn't want to leave it at that sort of level. I would want to sort it out. I'd want to be clear. So as part of the redundancy negotiations, even though they're separate issues, I would recommend that that conversation is had and you clarify what the expectations are of each of the parties.
Okay. I mean, assuming, I don't know, assuming there isn't a contract in place already, at that point, would you try to insert a contract?
Yeah, I would. Yeah. You would then be wanting to put something down in writing, in black and white, to make it clear what the expectations are.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming from what you said that it's an unsecured loan.
Yeah.
Now, my view of that situation would be that when they're an employee, it's a more comfortable relationship.
Yeah.
That person's now going to leave your business, and let's assume they're maybe going on to do other things. That relationship isn't so close anymore. If I was the lender in that scenario, I might be thinking of inserting some extra security provisions at this point in the relationship.
Yeah.
So getting a charge on a house or something.
Yeah.
Because once that person's not working for you anymore, if you fall out at that point, it might be harder for you to assert yourself.
Yeah.
So as the lender in that scenario, you might want to think about some extra protection for yourself.
Yeah, and I'm just thinking about it myself. What I would put in there is what the actual interest is as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, loan agreements really ought to be written down.
Yeah.
Because they're, certainly if this was a professional lender, the consumer legislation would kick in and say you'd have to. This is more of a private lending arrangement, so the legislation doesn't necessarily apply. It might. We maybe need to look into that a bit more.
Yeah.
But I'm assuming it's a private lending arrangement that was made between two parties. It's not regulated.
Yeah.
Because regulated loans is a whole different ballgame.
Yeah.
But I think to avoid any doubt in the future, clear it up now, make it part of the redundancy negotiations, make it clear.
Ali, thank you. Yeah, that's brilliant. We really have run out of time. I just want to read these two just so you know. Afril Bray Limited said, Ali Young Law, the issue with many startups is you don't know what you don't know. Our major learning point is having a shareholder agreement when setting up with other people and paying for legal expertise is money incredibly well spent. Absolutely. We've got quite a bit of input on this, Ali, so you'll have to log on to your Twitter account eventually and look at this. Alpha 311.
I think I need to talk to your We Do social media people. Yeah. Someone needs to teach me how to use Twitter.
Yeah, absolutely. Alpha 311, loving listening to Ali Young Law. Barry Thompson, cracking show today. Love listening to Stuart, and Ali Young Law is brilliant. So there you go.
Hi, Barry. I do know Barry from before, actually. Yeah, it's been a while, but yeah, hi, Barry.
Oh, you know that Barry's invented this device.
I know, he's brilliant.
It's fantastic.
He's brilliant.
Yeah, it's a sustainable windmill that's only about
that big. It's amazing. Can go in your garage and stuff.
It's a windmill that doesn't need wind. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable
product.
He's
a clever... But also, I was looking at the things on motorways. I want to put the solar panels on motorways.
Yeah.
Bring it on.
Ali, very quickly, look, we've only got 4 minutes left and I haven't done half of this. So look, Jules needs to say nothing. Ali needs to give us a shout out for her website so that people can come and find out more about Ali.
Ali-young-law.co.uk.
Fantastic. Brilliant. There's a link to that on the Kent Business Radio website.
Thank you.
Ali, you've been absolutely brilliant. I'm sorry to cut you off when there's so many more things we could talk about. So we're going to have you back and we're going to talk about more. I'm going to make Ali our resident lawyer, I think. I think that's the easiest way to do it.
I really love that. And if people have got questions, email them to you and I'll answer. Yeah, answer.
Yeah. Oh, we're going to make the Business Bunker resident lawyer, I think. That's the easiest way to do this.
Our friends at DG East are saying, hi, Jules, how about a shout-out for an exasperated vehicle supplier? No vehicles, no fuel, no leadership from the government.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right, here we go. Oh.
The Federation of Small Businesses News Roundup. Offering advice and guidance for small businesses and the self-employed.
I'm going to read this as quickly as I possibly can before we go off air. Entries are now open for the Celebrating Small Business Awards 2022. If you want to find out all about it, go to the website fsbawards.co.uk. UK. I'm going to give you a number of events. At the end of this, I'm going to tell you where to, you can find the events and book them. So bear with me, but they're all in the same place eventually. So how to make critical decisions when the stakes are high. Now, that one's gone. Using and creating video to grow your business. Tomorrow, manana, Wednesday the 29th of September, 9:30 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. Kent Women in Enterprise Virtual Networking, Thursday the 30th of September, 9:30 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. Women in Enterprise Brunch, and I'll give you the link for that in a moment. There's also a Women in Enterprise Virtual Networking on the 7th of October, 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. with an optional after party, and that's hosted by Sue Hainsby of Carlene Lettings.
No question of that.
Yeah.
There's the Kent Bain Networking Group on Friday the 22nd of October, 12 noon to 2 p.m. Black History Month special. Join us for talks and a Q&A from three business owners from Kent and the South East who will discuss their successes. That's hosted by the lovely Gemma Fairclough-Haynes, who's also a lawyer. She's an HR lawyer.
She's a good mate of mine.
Yeah, she's brilliant. So that's Kent Bain Networking, Friday the 22nd of October. There's a Q&A breakfast meeting with the MP for Ashford, Mr. Damien Green, on Friday the 29th of October, 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. There's How to Attract Your Ideal Clients and Customers on Wednesday the 6th of October, 9:30 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. And then there's Supply Chain Opportunities and More with HS2 on Tuesday the 12th of October, 9:30 a.m. To 11 a.m. All of those are webinars. They're all online events. And there's one more. I said about the awards. Well, there's a webinar on how to be an award winner and why it matters. And it's a webinar teaching you how to apply for the awards and to structure it properly. That's taking place tomorrow, manana, Wednesday the 29th of September, 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. All of those things can be found by going to kentbusinessradio.co.uk/FSB. And all FSB events can be found there, and there are booking links and more, an in-depth detail of all the events that are taking place and the booking links for the FSB. That is a very quick roundup of the FSB news. Sorry that I got into, because we are fast approaching the end of the show. Jules, have you got anything else that you need to read urgently?
Nothing that's urgent that I can see, apart from, of course, the Marsh Networking, which we regularly read out. And you can go to www.marshnetwork.co.uk, Terry Botfield, and find out. But their next one is 30th of September, which is 7:45 a.m.
Fantastic. I want to tell you about this. Sue was on the show a few months ago, and she runs an education charity in Africa, helping people in Africa start businesses through an education charity called Our Moon Education. They're trying to raise funds. They have an Our Moon charity ball taking place on the 2nd of October at the Spa Hotel, Tunbridge Wells, 6:30 p.m. to midnight, black tie and cocktail dresses. That's just the blokes. Everybody else can come in what they want. Tickets are available via enthuse.com, or you can go to the charity website, which is ourmoon.org.uk. Support it. Sue does a fabulous job educating young people in various parts of mostly East Africa with education and getting themselves set up in business. So it's a fantastic thing. So do support their charity ball to help them raise funds to continue doing the work they're doing. I've got so many things I haven't read. It's unbelievable. So we'll have to read them next week. We've kind of got to the end of the show already. And I want to say a massive thank you to our show sponsors, We Do Social Media, to our guests, Stuart Tanton of the Kent Foundation, the wonderful Ali Young of Ali Young Law, to my gorgeous, smashed up and broken,
ribless,
purple bosomed,
but still bloody beautiful.
Oh, darling,
stonkingly gorgeous, Jules Serkin. Thank you so much. Thank you to everybody that joined in. I'm sorry if we didn't read all your tweets and all your emails. We will get round to it eventually.
Keep trucking on, and we hope you get some fuel.
Yeah, yeah.
Wherever you are.
Yeah, absolutely. And don't bank with HSBC. That's nice to you. We'll be back with another show next week. I'm back on Thursday with a Business Bunker Extra show, in which I've got an interview with Jim Frawley from New York. Jim runs the Bellwether Hub, which is an organisation that helps you reach your goals, basically. And it's a fantastic interview. So do check that out. 1 p.m. on Thursday, Business Bunker Extra Show here on Biz Radio. But we'll be back next week with another show. Take care, everybody, and we'll see you all soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye for now.
Bye.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
This is Channel 2.